Okay, the next speaker is Julie Horowitz. She's a research analyst with the William D. Ruckelshaus House Center, and she specializes in conflict resolution processes addressing critical areas in agriculture, which is a nice, easy topic to get into. But that's not her topic today. She's speaking on the fate of on-site septic system nitrogen discharge in groundwater of the Hood Canal Basin, which is another simple topic to foray into until she can solve the other one, I guess. So, Julie?
All right. I think I'm turned on. Okay. So I know I stand between you and your break, so I'll try to make this as exciting as possible. So, I'm Julie, as she introduced me, and I'm going to be talking today about the fate of nitrogen from septic systems in the Hood Canal watershed. And this research was done here in the Department of Civil Environmental Engineering at the University of Washington, and Michael Brett and Mark Benjamin were the faculty leads on this research. So, first, the overall big picture. A lot of you probably heard Scott Bechtold's talk this morning, and he talked about related research, so some of this will be review, but I'll go through it quickly. So excess nutrients in aquatic systems result in often result in excess algal growth, eutrophication. And this excess algae can use up the available oxygen in the system and result in low available dissolved oxygen, which is a problem for marine organisms and the system in general. And this is occurring in Hood Canal, and this is the system that we've been studying. So we're interested in understanding what causes it. On-site septic systems are the primary wastewater treatment system in the Hood Canal watershed. Most homes and most residences and commercial facilities all treat their wastewater through septic systems. So this is potentially a source of nitrogen to Hood Canal. The real question is, how much of it is being removed in the groundwater as it travels from the septic tank towards Hood Canal, because it's in that watershed? How much is being removed along the way through denitrification processes? And I'll talk about denitrification in more detail. So the purpose of this study was to measure how much denitrification is occurring. This will tell us how much is getting there. But what we found is that there's a great deal of variability in the extent of denitrification in the subsurface, in the Hood Canal Basin, and actually in most places. And so this variability makes it really difficult to say how much is getting there. So starting again with the big picture, I have a pointer here. Let's see if I can make it work. So you can see that most of the areas of low dissolved oxygen from eutrophication is on the Atlantic and Gulf coasts. And these systems tend to be more densely populated. They tend to have more agricultural inputs. And they also tend to be warmer and shallower than other basins. So you can see that over on the West Coast, there's LA Harbor, and then there's us up here at Hood Canal. So we're interested in understanding why is this happening in Hood Canal. Hood Canal is located on the Olympic Peninsula. It's a large fjord-like estuary. You can see that it comes down and makes a bend at the end. This is Lower Hood Canal. And it's long, narrow, and deep. And it has really unique circulation patterns, which the Hood Canal Dissolved Oxygen Program, which is the overall study of Hood Canal group, has been looking at those marine dynamics. And this is an image that Scott showed earlier, but it's just so great at characterizing this that I have it up here again. What you see is that the warmer colors means less and less available oxygen. And so what you can see, and this is in August of 2006, is that there's less available oxygen as you go down the canal and in the end of it. And there is chronic low dissolved oxygen in Lower Hood Canal in the summer. There's also episodic events where the dissolved oxygen levels drop to nearly zero in the mid-canal. And the result of it is very extreme. It puts a great deal of stress on marine ecosystems in Hood Canal. So there's a lot of potential contributions of nitrogen to the system. The biggest one is the ocean. The marine nitrogen sources are the primary source of nitrogen in Hood Canal, as Scott talked about this morning. But there are a lot of other sources, and we're interested particularly in septics. And it's an anthropogenic source, and we're interested in quantifying, so how much are people putting in through this mechanism? So how do we do that? How do we determine how much nitrogen is contributed from septic systems to Hood Canal? Well, it's fairly easy to figure out how much is coming out of septic systems because we can create a mass balance equation. If we know how many people live in the watershed and we know how much water they use, and we know what the concentration is of nitrogen in the water that's leaving their home, all of those numbers are fairly easy to quantify. This one is based on census data, and the seasonal populations can be determined based on metrics like trash output. It changes, it increases in the summer when there's more people. Per capita water use is fairly well established for what it is in the United States, what people use, and so is this value of septic nitrogen effluent concentrations. The real big question is, after it leaves the septic tank, how much is removed along the way and how much is getting there? So let's review what happens to nitrogen, the nitrogen cycle. So here we have our home and we have our septic tank, and the nitrogen begins as organic nitrogen and some of it as ammonium, and is rapidly all converted to ammonium in the septic tank. As the water leaves the septic tank, it enters the drain field, and the drain field is a series of perforated pipes where the water is dispersing into the subsurface. And as it moves through the drain field, most drain fields are constructed in the aerobic zone of the subsurface, and that's ideal because that way the ammonium is converted to nitrate as it is exposed to oxygen. As this nitrate travels through the subsurface, if it enters a saturated zone where there's particular conditions, denitrification can occur, and I'll talk about the conditions that make denitrification occur in just a minute, but this potential for denitrification is what we're interested in. And so, what makes denitrification happen? Well, just to review, it's the primary nitrogen removal process in the subsurface. And it's this piece of the nitrogen cycle over here. Does the nitrate convert to N2 gas? And if it does, then it'll leave the system, it'll enter the atmosphere, and it will not go to Hood Canal. So that's our loss mechanism. So what do you need to have denitrification occur? Well, you have to have the right microbes because they're the ones that make the process happen. And you have to have the right conditions for those microbes to carry out this process. You need anoxic conditions, so no oxygen or very, very little. Otherwise, it's not favorable. And you also need a source, an electron donor source, for them to carry out this redox reaction. And the most common is carbon, organic carbon. But there's other sources like reduced iron or sulfide that can also be used. So when we looked at that, when we were doing that initial modeling with those different boxes of population and those different things, we thought, well, okay, we'll look in the literature for denitrification rates. And what we found was that it's not a nice normal distribution, but that there's a really broad range of denitrification that's been measured. So this is 25 studies that were where we took and the denitrification rates and looked at them. And what you can see is that most of the studies showed little to no denitrification. And there was some that showed a little bit, and then there were some that had quite a bit. And so where does Hood Canal fit into that? Well, that's what we wanted to figure out. And the reason we needed to know it is because when we did that modeling, we found that the model was most dependent on the concentration of nitrogen leaving the septic tank, which we can determine pretty well, and then this loss rate, which is the denitrification component. And so since the load to Hood Canal is so heavily based on this, it was important to find it out. So here's our model again, and this component is where we're now going to talk about the field studies that we tried to figure this number or this situation out with. So here's Hood Canal again, and we began with a lot of field study sites. And you can see that they're located in Kitsap and Mason counties. And then we quickly found out that it's a very hard thing to study denitrification. So I'll talk more about the challenges that we confronted, but pretty much, it's really hard to get water out of the ground when you have shallow little wells. And if you imagine that it's easy because there's a shallow glacial till layer, it's not. So we focused this, and this talk will focus on four study sites where we did more in-depth research and we were more sort of further able to characterize what was going on in terms of denitrification processes. And so here are four sites. And they're spatially varied to give you a broad picture of what's happening in the Hood Canal watershed. There's the upland site. This is shallow glacial till. It's located in Kitsap County. There were two sites located in close proximity to Hood Canal. One of them was a riparian site, so the soil was actually really rich organic soils. And there was another one that was also a shallow glacial till site. And then we also had a couple sites along the shoreline. And these are sites, and Scott showed some images this morning of the water coming in and out next to the drain field. You can see why. This is Hood Canal, and this is their bulkhead, and the drain field is right here. So the water goes in and out and takes the septic effluent with it. So we installed wells at all of these sites. This is Dr. Michael Brett installing sampling wells. And we sampled the water from these wells throughout the course of this study. And just to give you a sense of what this looked like, here's our upland field site. The home is right here, and there's their septic tank. And the drain field extends throughout the yard. It's a series of pipes. And then what we did was we installed our wells in what we assumed was our downgradient direction from the drain field. And we also have one well over here that's our background well. And that well is intended to show what's the concentrations in the groundwater away from the drain field. What does that look like? So what did we find? Well, first, before we get into the denitrification stuff, I feel like I'm holding out on you guys with the denitrification stuff, but I'm getting there. So first, looking at the availability of nitrate, because in order to have denitrification, you have to have nitrate in the subsurface. We did find that at the riparian site, there was high concentrations of ammonium in the septic tank. And this is showing that it's all ammonium and no nitrate. And in the sampling wells, it was all nitrate and no ammonium. So the ammonium was being converted to nitrate. And likewise, at the upland site, all ammonium in the septic tank and all nitrate in the sampling wells. So we know that as the water leaves the septic tank in the drain field, it is being oxidized to nitrate. So how did we model the removal of nitrogen in the subsurface? Because you can't measure the removal. We can only measure what the constituents are in the ground. And so what we did was we created a little model. If we know what the concentration is in the septic tank, that's our fully concentrated effluent. And in the groundwater, that's with no nitrogen effluent whatsoever. So anything in between is along a dilution gradient a mixing gradient where dilution's occurring, if there's no removal or loss. So for chloride salt is conservative. It's not being removed in the subsurface. It's traveling with this water and is not sorbing onto anything. So as the chloride from the septic tank, and it tends to be very high, is diluted by groundwater, it should be a linear relationship until there's none left. The nitrogen, however, is potentially being removed. So what we can do with knowing these chloride values is that we can say, okay, well, if we know the chloride and we know the nitrogen on each end, we can determine what we would expect the nitrogen to be based on those values. And when we find less nitrogen, we can figure out how much was removed. So here's some data, finally. These are plots showing the probability of percent nitrogen removal. It's sort of a mouthful. But essentially, if we had tall bars up here, that would mean there was a high probability of a lot of removal. So a lot of the nitrogen would be removed. And likewise, if there were tall bars down here, that would mean that most of the nitrogen was being conservatively transported through the system, not being removed. Well, at this site, it's neither. You can see in year one at the upland site, we had partial removal. The median percent removal was 66%. And in the year two, it was 40%, also partial removal. It's interesting that it changed really dramatically from one year to the next. We don't know why, but that's what we found, was that there was partial removal at this site, but that temporally, over time, it was changing. So at the riparian site, you can see here that there was extensive removal. The median removal was 92%. So nearly all of the nitrogen from the septic tank was being removed through denitrification in the subsurface, and therefore very little would get to Hood Canal. This is the site that was really rich in organics, which means that there's much more available electron donor source for denitrification to occur. The nearshore site, and I just put these up here to look complicated, but it was complicated. At first, we put in wells at this site, and we found that we weren't getting any water out of them. And so we actually put in deep wells to 20 feet to actually interact with the shallow groundwater table at this site. And what we found was that there were multiple septic systems sort of interfering with each other, that we were not only sampling ours, but others. And this is a complicating factor. When you have lots of different facilities or homes near one another, you aren't necessarily just getting your isolated groundwater source. You're getting multiple sources. What we found, though, is that there was likely about 30% removal at this site. We were able to sort of parse out a little bit with these different sources what the different removal could be, and it seemed like it was probably around 30%, so much lower. And at the shoreline site, you can see here that there was also a really high probability for little to no removal. Okay, never mind. Yes, so little removal and a high probability of direct transport based on sort of the dynamics of those systems right next to the canal, salt water infiltrating in and drawing that water back out. So I said I was going to talk more about the challenges, and this was one of the major parts of this study, that that it was challenging to try to understand where is denitrification occurring, and where we couldn't understand it, why couldn't we? So there were a number of different things that we ran into. One of them was the accessibility of the groundwater. So we put in wells and we couldn't get any water back out, and that has a lot to do with the geology. There was also issues around dilution, particularly at the shoreline sites. We found that the water was really rapidly being diluted by salt water. And if you remember, we were using salt as the tracer to identify where the septic plume was. Well, that doesn't work when you have salt water. So we were using lithium and other tracers to try to identify that. But even still, with the salt water coming in, there was a great deal of dilution occurring. And like I talked about with the nearshore sites, there's the complexity of having multiple septic systems in the same area. Therefore, it's hard to identify what's your source, how much removal is occurring. And this connects to the first point, but the geology and the groundwater flow paths are really complex. And so even though you put your wells in a downgradient or assume downgradient direction, that doesn't mean that the water is going to go there. It's just not how it goes. And so then sort of the end result of this and the biggest challenge is just the heterogeneity of these processes in the subsurface. So based on all of that, what did we find? Well, we are sort of able, despite all of those challenges, to make some conclusions. We did find that at our upland site, we had partial removal. At the riparian site, there was extensive removal. And at the nearshore and shoreline sites, there was little to no removal. And so, based on all of this, what can we conclude? Well, we did find, and I showed those one like definitive graphs about ammonium being converted to nitrate. And this is commonly thought to occur, and it did occur, that the ammonium was converted to nitrate. Also, we did find that denitrification is occurring in a lot of locations around Hood Canal, that this process varies, but it's occurring. Like I said, it varies. So there's a great deal of spatial variation between these different landscapes, but even within sites, we had multiple wells at each site, and we would find a great deal of variation in the extent of the removal within each site, and also over time at that one site where we studied it for 2 years. We did find that that varied as well. And so there's the potential to do more research on this. You could look at, well, what are the conditions limiting denitrification? Is it the lack of electron donors? Is it having too high dissolved oxygen? But the reality is that probably won't help with scaling up and determining denitrification rates. Because of the heterogeneity, even if you understand the conditions that result in denitrification occurring or not, it's still too heterogeneous to say, okay, then we know it's happening here or it's not. And this isn't unique to this study. There's a great deal of literature on denitrification being conducted around the world throughout the United States. And everyone seems to find sort of similar things, that in specific areas you can identify, okay, there's this much removal occurring. But being able to more generally say on a landscape scale, this is how much denitrification occurring is really difficult. So I'd like to thank a number of different entities. The Washington State Legislature funded this research. Puget Sound Partnership coordinated it. And it was done in conjunction with the Hood Canal Dissolved Oxygen Program. And as you heard from Scott's work earlier, it's part of that bigger picture study. So thank you. Questions? Yes?
Do you notice different concentrations of septic systems in Hood and the canal?
So the question was, did we notice different concentrations of septic systems as you go down Hood Canal? Do you mean the density of the systems, or do you mean concentrations in the systems themselves? Sorry, I'm not sure what. Okay, there are more people in the lower Hood Canal area. So, and also on the side where the Olympic Mountains drain into Hood Canal, there's some areas where there's higher population density, like in Hoodsport. That's one location on the west side of Hood Canal. But for the most part, most of the people live in the Belfair area, which is down in the Lynch Cove, the bottom part, and or along the shoreline in that area. In terms of concentrations in septic tanks, they do vary depending on how much water people use, and commercial offices are different than homes because there's less shower water and other things being mixed in. But generally, the ratio of chloride to nitrogen, which is what we were most interested in, is pretty consistent. Yes?
Do you examine the age of septic tanks? Did that have any effect on their ability to do their job?
So did we examine the age of the septic tanks, and did that affect the ability for them to do their job? We did get age data and sort of general information about the septic tanks. We tried to, anyways. It was the availability of that varied. But some of them seem to work better than others, and their working ability sort of did and didn't affect this study. I mean, if a system is failing, then it's potentially flooding out untreated effluent into the drain field. And we didn't have any systems that were failing. But if the system is working properly, then the ammonium should be coming out of the system, and as it travels through the drain field, being converted to nitrate. And that may vary a little bit in terms of the system's age affecting sort of how it functions, but there wasn't any distinct sort of effects from that. Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
Would current codes allow new septic systems to be constructed in shoreline environments like you studied, where the denitrification was lower?
Good question. No. I forget exactly what the setback is now, but those homes that are right on Hood Canal, where the drain field is directly next to or within a few feet of the high tide mark, that is no longer acceptable. And typically what they do in those shoreline properties now, and some of them they're retrofitting and doing this, is that they'll put the system across the street uphill, and it's, you know, that's it's expensive and it's somewhat complicated, but where it's possible, it seems like that can be a good solution, just to avoid that direct contact. There's two questions back there. So the person with the plaid shirt and then the black shirt. So recommendations for homeowners who live along that shoreline who are concerned about contributing to the problem. That's a good question. It's there are more expensive approaches. There are some septic systems that actually have a nitrogen removal component in them. And in some places, they are starting to install those sorts of systems. Some of that area is actually going to be, or is, I think, slated to be treated with a centralized wastewater treatment and not septic. But in terms of what a homeowner can do on their own within their existing condition, there's not a great deal, except for taking good care of their septic system and maintaining it, making sure it doesn't fail, and all of those sorts of things. So the woman in the black shirt, and then that's it. Yes.
And how did you go about selecting the homeowners? How did you approach them?
So how did we pick the homeowners? That was actually sort of fun. In the beginning, there were recommendations from people who worked out in the Hood Canal area through the Hood Canal Dissolved Oxygen Program about, oh, talk to this person, talk to that person. And it turned out that a lot of them were folks who were involved with Hood Canal and cared a lot about the system and wanted to sort of help out and so they volunteered their homes. And we spent a lot of time in their backyards, and so that was a really big contribution on their part, to have wells sticking out of their yard and to have scientists tromping through there like once a week for the whole winter. So thank you.